And the question is, are these mutations really random? Well, in 1943, they wanted to run another experiment just to, you know, cover the problems that Weissman had in his experiment. So two microbiologists by the name of Salvador Luria and Max Delbruck wanted to find out, were mutations in bacteria purely random events? So what they did is they started with genetically identical populations of bacteria, grew large numbers of these genetically identical bacteria, and then seeded the population into 100 different Petri dishes. After the bacteria were added to the Petri dish, Luria and Delbruck added viruses, which are called phages, bacteriophages, viruses that generally kill the bacteria. And in fact, yes, as soon as they added the viruses, in a very short time, almost all the bacteria died. But every now and then, one or two or more of the culture dishes would have colonies that would survive. So the question was, well, did the colonies that survived, was that just an accident of mutation, or was that some process that the bacteria expressed as a way to change its genetics? Well, to answer the question, the issue is this. If it was an innate process in bacteria where they could change their genetics in response to a threat like the viruses, then all bacteria should have this possibility, and therefore, while all of them may not express it, at least you're going to find in each Petri dish the same number of bacteria that were able to avoid being killed by the viruses. But if it was just totally a random event, and the bacteria were not really contributing to the change, then the distribution of the surviving bacteria would be totally random as well, so that only occasional plates would have surviving bacteria, which is what Luria and Delbruck found. So what their results revealed was, using this assay, it said, no, the bacteria weren't capable of making a concerted effort to control their heredity. The ones that survived, it was just total chance of accidental mutations that allowed them to survive. So Luria and Delbruck's experiment cemented the concept that all mutations are just random events. And therefore, we own and buy that now. And the consequence of owning and buy that is that since mutations are purely random and unpredictable, they have nothing to do with any need that the organism might have in the present or the future. Meaning, hey, a mutation occurs, and if you're lucky to have something that's good, that's great. And if you get a mutation that's bad, I'm sorry, you got a problem. And we bought then that in a conclusion that evolution is driven totally by these random events and has no purpose. And the concept of a random mutation fit with the scientific materialism's basal paradigm, the belief that we live in a purely materialistic universe. And this belief in random evolution shifted the focus from an intentional creation, which is emphasized in the monotheistic paradigm that, oh, life was intentionally created, and says, no, it was total accident and it was just pure chance. And so it says then today, in our own lives, if things go awry in our biology and our physiology, or where is evolution going, there is no answer to that. And the reason why? Because we step back and say, hey, it was a total accident, independent of the environment in the first place, so just live with it.
Isn't it interesting, Bruce, that the central dogma wasn't actually ever proven? The central dogma was never proved scientifically. In a similar way, the decision that corporations were persons was never actually made by the Supreme Court. And in a certain sense, when you already have these preconceptions, in this case, misconceptions that are preconceptions, you have these preconceptions that really colors everything that you see. So we may not think much about this, but what does it mean to have our preconceptions of meaninglessness, of purposelessness, of randomness in life? How does that really impact us? It seems really abstract. If we look at the 20th century, one of the interesting phenomena in the 20th century was existentialism, and the whole idea that God is dead. That was what the existentialists said. Well, if God is dead, what else is dead? What died with God? And in many ways, all values of truth and beauty and transcendence become diminished because, again, it has no meaning anyway. Life is a random experience. It's happening to us. There's nothing we can do about it. So where do all these values go? What difference does it make if you value any of these things? Another very significant phenomenon of the mid-20th century was George Orwell's book, 1984, a book that talked about how easy it is to manipulate and brainwash people once they've been cleansed of these transcendent values and understandings. People lose a sense of perspective and discernment and consequently can be made to believe anything as long as the belief is repeated often enough. And they're told and believe that this mind slavery is always freedom. And in a certain sense, the more lockstep our beliefs are, the more they conform invisibly to these invisible understandings, the more free we imagine that we are. In the 1980s, during the Brezhnev era, some Soviet journalists came to America, and they were fascinated and puzzled at the same time. And what fascinated and puzzled them was not the fact that you can go to the store and buy 50 different brands of detergent, or that you didn't have to wait in line at stores, none of that. What they were fascinated about was the uniformity of belief that most Americans had. And they were saying, to get that level of agreement in the Soviet Union, we have to torture people. We have to rip off their fingernails. How do you do it?